Hi, I'm Sharad Kutan, and welcome to Let's Talk, the show that brings you the most important conversations of the day. Today's edition, of course, we look back at the week that was and a week's worth of news, because it was the first anniversary of the Pakatan Harapan government, a year since Barisan Nasional fell from power, at least at the federal level. It, of course, still holds on to Perlis and Pahang, because Perlis is very small, but that's no reason to disregard it. We're also going to talk about other issues. To help me with this conversation, I have Melissa Idris from The Future is Female, and also Rizal Zulkapli, who is with Awani Global. Okay, we're back together again. Okay,
yes.
1 year. I'm going to ask you, Rizal, honestly, are you tired of talking about this 1 year anniversary?
I am. What? To be honest, I am.
Guys,
I like the celebration of people's power, people, democracy and all that, but after a year, they're putting all this pressure on themselves to perform and to set the standard 100 days, 1 year, 2 years, 3 years.
So you think it's coming from them?
I think it's coming from them. I think that the pressure will just be so much from them that next year, when we celebrate the 2 years anniversary of this of PH being in power, it's just going to be so much pressure on them, and we're going to hear the same narrative. Give us more time.
Right.
You know we've done X amount of things. I think it's not that milestone that I want to look at. I want to look at the big picture, the big narrative.
Okay.
Because right now
direction, right?
Direction. Mm. Because I think right now tone has been the only one giving out the narrative, as opposed to the other ministers. I haven't heard the same strong narrative.
Well, Rafiya has jumped in, and
she
said, "Give them 5 years to make that assessment."
5 years is fair. Yeah.
Okay, Melissa, what's your take?
I feel the opposite. I am actually encouraged that, for once, we have a populace who is vigilant and keeping check on the current government. I mean, this is a sign of a maturing democracy, right? I can't remember the last time we held Barisan Nasional to a one-year report card immediately after they won back power. I mean, it's been 6 years, but you know, I mean, this is an idea that the voters want to see progress. I am not all in favor of this one-year report card. I don't think it's a kind of a rating system or a checklist that we go through.
The scoring system that ministers gave themselves.
I am against
that. Students in school being able to mark their own exam papers.
Well, to be completely honest with you, I mean, if we were going to use that analogy, someone told me this, you can't give someone an assessment after 1 year. It's like SPM. You have 5 years, right? So take the SPM and then do the final assessment after 5 years. So in the sense of a report card, I'm not, I don't buy it, but I think with Rizal, I agree with him in terms of where is the direction and what is the messaging. Do we even have a narrative that's coming out of cabinet that we are happy with?
Mm. Okay, I do want to ask a question on the issue of the spectacle, right? So we had to deliver the speech in front of his cabinet and in front of what it was looked like a huge audience, and he had the teleprompters going and he had the Nehru suit and all that. I just wondered whether there could have been a different style in delivering the one-year report. It didn't have to be so much hoopla and spectacle.
What were you expecting? I mean, given the hype that everyone was talking about, I mean, look at all the TV stations. Almost every TV station had some form of special programming throughout the day.
Yeah, it's true. They did. I would like to have seen much more kind of conversations rather than the big speech. But but the big speech is there, and it's available, I think, for all kinds of analysis. Mm-hmm. I think there was a shared prosperity message, I think, that was telegraphed very well. And one needs to ask, I mean, how different is the shared prosperity narrative from what Barisan Nasional for decades, whatever its faults were, also sort of said, never mind what they did.
But I think the narrative was really good. The content was really good. I think the content was okay, like sufficient and good for 1 year. Speech celebrating the 1 year of Pakatan Harapan, but I think the spectacle, there was no spectacle at all. I think it was quite austere, in my opinion. It was quite austere as opposed to the things I've seen
before?
The previous government.
I mean, austere would have been like a simple stage and everybody being on it.
No, I think they had to gather people to support the Prime Minister, to show support to the Prime Minister after 1 year, you know, that we're still here, we're still in power, and we will do this thing moving forward.
But what it did also do is it focused attention also on Tun himself.
Yes.
I think one thing that at least I haven't seen in the media is an analysis of his performance. Mm-hmm. He did seem very tired to me. Mm-hmm. He was stumbling over his text.
Bulan puasa lah.
He was. I don't. Maybe. But I thought that he was showing his age. Mm-hmm. And one thing that, of course, was very important and is very important is the question of the handover, the succession mm-hmm. story, because if we go back to the issue of how long Tun stays mm-hmm. in the position as prime minister, 2 years was bandied about. If 2 years is the time frame, then he's done half of it already.
Right. I want to see the other ministers have the same narrative that Tun has right now, because I spoke with one minister, I interviewed one minister, and she was very focused on telling people what her ministry had done for the past 1 year, but not addressing the big narrative, how that would put, you know, go together with the anti-corruption or nation going forward, you know, celebrating a nation that is looking at Industrial Revolution 4.0. I don't know what the narrative is, but she's not looking at that. She's looking at, I've done A, B, C, I've done X, Y, Z.
It's what they think people want to hear, right?
Because I don't want to look at that, because I know we can get the report card or whatever, the report. But I want to look at the big picture.
Yeah.
Because in half an hour, you can only talk so much.
I wonder, Sharad, about, you know, the polls that have come out recently, the popularity polls, you know, whether Pakatan Harapan is more popular or not after winning in Putrajaya, right? My question is Pakatan Harapan in Putrajaya listening to why these polls seem to be slipping? And that, for me, is more important than them shouting one way what they've done in 1 year. Mm-hmm. How much in this 1 year have they listened to us, mm-hmm. the people who have been asking for certain things? And
I wonder whether they have. I would say that, okay, the government has to do several things. It has to listen to people, it has to be consultative, but it also has a view of change very different from ordinary people have. And in fact, even the media. I don't think the media has telegraphed enough the complexities of institutional change, mm-hmm. of political cultural change, and so on and so forth. Mm. And I've had several guests over the last several months. Mm-hmm. I've been talking about Malaysia Baru for this whole year, in fact, in my show. People like Meredith Wise and you know, more recently Sophie Lamien, and all who talked about this. Change is difficult when you understand the kind of creature Barisan Nasional was. I mean, you know, the ecosystem that developed around Barisan Nasional in terms of the distribution of power and so on. I do think it's very complicated. Yeah. I don't think people appreciate enough how complex.
So whose fault is that? Is it, and how do we get that conversation, right? Is it messaging from Putrajaya to say this is more important than a 1 year report card, or is it the media we're focused on this 1 year report card?
Because it's difficult for them to say, right? You see these are the changes that are happening in the government. But the problem is it's distilled down to figures, sound bites. Icons, but
140
not the workings
characters.
Behind it. 140 characters, but not the workings behind it. How do you change the mindset of civil servants who used to 60 years of the same thing, way of doing things, and then you appoint a person and you see that person as an image of change, right. But you don't see the workings behind it, the philosophy behind it. So I think it's harder to capture that.
Yeah, but and you know, it's a question of you know, the types of journalism we do. And we often just sit down and we interview somebody and put them in the chair and say, what have you done? And what are they going to do? They're going to pull out their CV and say, I've done this, and these are the numbers, and these are the initiatives we have started, right? But it seems to me that unless the media has a much more creative way of looking at the inner workings of government and communicate that, then we're not going to get those stories. Mm-hmm.
So my question is, when we rank or give a mark to a minister, right, what does it actually achieve? Will the minister lose his or her job? Will the minister be forced to change his or her policies and the way they run? For me, it's a genuine question. I want to know, when they're giving these rankings and these ratings, what does that translate into?
Okay. It doesn't do anything.
You tell us which ministers you think should lose their jobs. Okay, we'll be right back with Let's Talk. Welcome back to Let's Talk. I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, Melissa Idris. The future is Melissa, or female, if you like. Rizal Zulkapli, Awani Global. Okay, part of the speech that Tun gave yesterday in the afternoon was about the achievements of women under the administration of Pakatan Harapan. And it was quite interesting. And, you know, Rizal, you brought up this chart, and we'll flash it on the screen.
We've got this as well.
Okay.
Yeah, smaller version.
Yes.
I must say,
it's a quote from somewhere, I think it's a British playwright, who said, she might be a sister, but she ain't a comrade. Meaning, just because you have a woman there doesn't mean that you're necessarily in agreement with them ideologically, or they communicate. Because I would flag some ministers, Rina Harun, for instance, who very recently came out to say that transgendered people cannot be teachers. An extraordinary statement of exclusion. Mm. And I, along with other people, were very upset by that, right? So there she is, a woman, but she's not demonstrating the values we ascribe to progressive women.
Right.
She's a woman, but she's not necessarily progressive.
You know, I've heard that argument before, that just because you have women in leadership positions, decision-making positions, doesn't necessarily mean they will champion gender parity policies, right? Because, you know, other considerations may come in place. I can see that point, but it's just about the person, isn't it? Whether you exclude, you know, from an area that you don't think you're part of. So perhaps Rina Harun does not consider herself to be, you know, to have any kind of affiliation with the transgender community. Therefore, she feels it's okay to say that. But having women in those positions, I think, is important to then at least have a different perspective. You can't create change in terms of gender parity if you don't have someone who's lived through it. And I think in a small way, it is important to have. So while Pakatan Harapan, this is not a checklist or a report card, Pakatan Harapan has failed in several aspects of the manifesto, I am quite happy with how they've appointed women for the GLCs, GLICs, and the agencies. And I thought that was a better improvement than just, I think they didn't meet the cabinet requirements. So in cabinet, their manifesto, there was a promise that said 30% representation of women beginning with cabinet. They are short. I think they're short of 3 women in cabinet. So yes, there are 4 deputy women ministers, but they're not in cabinet.
I mean,
so short.
What do you think of the conversations around the cabinet appointments? You know, there was quite a bit of pushback on the gender issue. But how did you view that? Because we now have had a year of these individuals leading the country and ministries. What's your take on it, Rizal?
Again, the benchmark is 1 year. I think we should look forward to a longer benchmark milestones, because I think in 1 year, this is what they've done. And this, if you look at the trajectory, I think will set for a better second year and third year.
So, well, I want to ask you this. I mean, the realities of coalition politics, right? The cabinet is made up of people who essentially represent their parties, the parties in the coalition, and the ability to draw votes and to create this
win,
right?
That's just the nature of
that's coalition politics, right? So a lot of, I think, Malaysians dream of a cabinet that's technocratic, meaning they are competent in the fields that they are now asked to lead.
Yeah.
And that's certainly not this cabinet. And it's never been this any cabinet under Barisan Nasional. It wasn't a technocratic cabinet either, right? So how do we move forward? I mean, if people are put in place who are there just because they represent their party and their party needs representation in cabinet.
Right. Well,
not because they're competent.
You know, that is really kind of a mindset change, right? You need to stop rewarding for winning seats, right? You need to stop rewarding with positions in cabinet or minister positions for just winning seats. And I think that is a long game. But I do want to say, you know, the appointments of women in leadership positions, that is a short-term win. So that's a short-term policy. What we want to see in terms of a long game is changes in policy. So, you know, for instance, Sharad, you said appointing women to leadership positions may not mean they champion gender parity policies. It is the gender parity policy that we want to see, not so much the women in leadership, right? It's important, but what has Pakatan Harapan done in terms of promoting, you know, gender, a gender-positive narrative when it comes to their policies, making sure that women are not excluded, no woman left behind. Those are the things that we want to see, because policies and law reform last longer than just appointments.
So as I said earlier, these are just icon sound bites, people that you see representing the change. But Melissa rightly pointed out that you need policies. You need policies to be in place. The fact that Rina Harun said transgender should not be teachers, where's the policy behind it? What is the thinking behind it? What's the idea behind it?
What, the Gender Equality Act, the Sexual Harassment Act, the anti-stalking laws, the amendments to the Employment Act. All these things will be a lot better in terms of showing progress and Pakatan's commitment to gender parity.
Okay, I do want to ask you this. I mean, I don't know if either of you watched the Al Jazeera interview with Deepak Jayakishan.
Did you? No.
Okay, but the headlines coming out of it are quite remarkable. Basically saying that Rosma Manso, who was mentioned in Tun's speech, by the way, Rosma Manso was the de facto prime minister. Now, that's his personal opinion, but it does make you think about how power is distributed. We think of the formal positions of, as ones having the power, but actually power could be distributed in all kinds of ways, including powerful spouses.
I know another
And
senior.
I suspect the DPM spouse is very powerful.
Well, I spoke with one senior politician a few years ago, and he kept mentioning that if she's not around, then Najib will become a great prime minister. Najib will be a great prime minister. If she's not around, and I was, of course, clueless, and I was not clueless, but I was just playing playing coy, and I said to my editor, who is this she person? You know, because I think it's public knowledge.
It's an open secret.
It's an open secret. But interestingly, the interview is coming out during the first year anniversary of Pakatan Harapan being in power.
My question.
I would just say this, because sometimes, you know, it's kind of like the Macbeth story. Everybody says it's Lady Macbeth who is the truly evil person and the one pulling all the strings. And it seems, you know, it absolves the men of responsibility, because it pushes all the intention and the motivations onto their spouses, their female spouses. Mm. You think it's unfair?
No, I don't think it's unfair. I think there's an element of truth of what you just said. Perhaps so. I mean, if this is, you know, one person's opinion, it's been echoed quite frequently in the past God knows how many years, right? But I do want to know why we want to talk about it. I mean, is it important to name the beast? Is it important to address these rumors or this open secret in the same breath as we're talking about women empowerment and women leadership? I feel that this is taking away from all the good things that we want to achieve.
We started a discussion on a positive note. We got this chart laid out nicely, and suddenly we move on to this.
In a situation, in a social structure where women do not have equal opportunities, they will seek power and influence in other ways. Mm. And it is the story, I mean, not just of Rosma Manso, but all other women of her sort, that they have sought it through their spouses. That they have married.
No, but she went to the US to get her master's degree.
So
what? No opportunity. Come on.
Well, but the question is, there has been a glass ceiling for women. And if you wanted, could she ever have imagined herself as prime minister? It's a Hillary Clinton moment, right? In American politics...
No, but Bill Clinton was very open about it. You vote for one, you get another one. You get one for the price of... You get two for the price of one. He was very open about it.
I don't think so. I don't think on the ballot box it said that, on the ballot paper that it said, if I vote for this, I get that one for free. And I'm not quite sure. However, can we say the same for our DPM? Was it two for the price of one? If you vote for one, you get the other. Is that right?
Good question. Okay, we'll be back for more. Stay tuned to Let's Talk. Welcome back to Let's Talk. It's me, Sharad, with Rizal and Melissa. And we're talking about the week that was, because we had the royal coronation out in Thailand, but we also had a baby prince.
Boy.
Yeah, prince. of the British royal family.
Baby
Archie
Sussex.
Harrison Mountbatten Windsor is his name. Now, a lot of talk. What do you make of this, Melissa?
Seventh in line to the throne. People were having
seventh in line.
Yeah, having bets over what they would name. So Archie was an unusual choice. Harrison, son of Harry. Mm-hmm. You know, I thought that was quite tongue-in-cheek. But for me, it was really the media spectacle around it, right?
Yeah.
So what was really interesting was that with the birth of this baby, all the aunties everywhere, including myself and my mom, were texting, oh, it's a boy, oh, he's born. So what that did was overshadowed one of the most important pieces of news this week, which
Brexit?
Was the UN report that said that a million species are at risk of being extinct in this world. And it came out on the same day, and the baby came out on the same day as the report came out, and we all paid attention to the baby and did not realize that the baby might not have a good world to live in, because if all these plants and flora and fauna go extinct, then what is he left with?
I like how you put that together.
Can I correct you? All of us are focused on baby Archie. Some of us actually read the
report. It was a bit weird, because I thought somebody said that the baby was born last week, and there was a lot of speculation as to whether the baby was already born or not. And suddenly, a few days ago, the baby was presented, and there was that whole spectacle of the baby being presented, and the reporter asking Harry, Prince Harry, how's the baby? You know, very good temperament. You want to say something about the temperament,
so
right?
So the quote that came out, Shira, was, he has the sweetest temperament, he's really calm, he's the dream. And here I have
an issue. And what else was he going to say?
No, but I feel like, I just want to reiterate, there is no competition for the best baby award. There is no competition for a super baby. Babies are messy and noisy and fussy. This kind of...
And you have to change them regularly.
True, just like you. But, you know, this expectation of perfection is really damaging. It is the new extreme fundamentalism, I think, because it is unrealistic expectations of mothers, of women, and it's finding ways to discredit them, I think, is the new way of attacking and hating women. It's expecting perfection out of mothers.
But I think it's true, because I remember with the Duchess of Cambridge, right? With Kate Middleton, people expected her to be really perfect and well-dressed all the time.
She just had a baby.
Yeah, and to be well-presented all the time. But with Meghan Markle...
That's what they get paid for. To be fair, and one does ask why some institutions like royals in some countries last as long as they have. And they often, function to provide a way of looking at the country as a whole, but through a very different lens. Not political, something in terms of people's ideals. So the presentation of royals as somehow an idealized notion of the nation, I think is very strong. And you see this in many countries. In Thailand, of course, we were talking about Thailand, the coronation, is that, since actually 1932, and the reconstruction of the Thai royals, there's been a huge amount of public relations poured into creating the idea of this perfect family.
Right, right. Yeah,
we know for a fact that this is no perfect family, the Thai royal family.
Well, there is no such thing as a perfect family.
But the UK has done it really well. They've capitalized on the social media. I was there in the UK last year when Prince Harry and Meghan Markle had the wedding.
Oh, wow.
So you got all the souvenirs, that Tintin biscuit.
You did.
You got the tea.
Did you get the souvenirs?
No, I did not. Because I was like, you know what? Let's just wait until the end of after the wedding, then probably become a bit cheaper. But apparently they were all sold out. So I was like, oh my God, I did not get that.
So your British biscuits.
No, I did not. But it was interesting to see that, how they actually supported the economy, and the spectacle was also at least contributing to the economy.
Trying to, I guess, revive the monarchy, and the younger ones have done that, the younger generations have really done that, especially in Britain. I also want to, this is a bit of a stretch, but for me, and this was highlighted by Ivy Josiah, women's rights expert, former WAO founder, executive director, she highlighted that, listen, this baby, royal baby being born, has the option of dual citizenship. Why? Because the mother is able to transfer her citizenship to the baby, whereas here in Malaysia, we don't have that. We are one country out of 25 countries that mothers are not able to transfer her citizenship to the baby if born on foreign soil.
And also we don't recognize dual citizenship.
Just to confer nationality. And also I think we're one out of 50 countries that denies women the equal rights in ability to confer nationality. So in that respect, I'm looking at this baby and I'm thinking, well, this baby's born and has the option of having UK citizenship for the father or US citizenship of the mother. Whereas so many women here are fighting to get citizenship for the children they bore and gave
but
birth
to. Is that
to.
Really being highlighted, or are you just looking
at
that?
I'm looking at that, and I'm thinking
it's a very good point, but it has to be highlighted, it has to be, you know.
Yeah, and something we'll come back to next week, because we run out of time. Thank you so much, Rizal. Thank you so much, Melissa.
Yes.
Thank you for being with us. This is The Week That Was. I'm Sharad Kutin. This is Let's Talk, only on Astro One.
Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, I appreciate it.